Quit eating your burgers off a coffee table. If you want to eat a burger, put it on a bar. Follow your instincts to B-Dubs for the new All-American Cheeseburger. Fresh, juicy beef smashed till it's crispy around the edges, covered in gooey cheese, and stacked to the ceiling with deliciousness. And knock that baby down with a frosted beer at the bar, just like the sports gods intended. The new All-American Cheeseburger at Buffalo Wild Wings. Roar! Please drink responsibly.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
You want answers!
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
You ever dance with the devil in the pale moonlight? What?
Take your stinking paws off me, you damn dirty ape!
At the Movies on BFM 89.9.
Hello there, I'm Uma Paganampke Pagan alongside Ian McNally and Bahir Yusuf, and we're reviewing the brand new film by Christopher Nolan. It's called Dunkirk, and of course it tells the true story of the battle at Dunkirk, where the Allied forces were stuck on a beach and essentially there were 400,000 soldiers who needed to be evacuated back to England. It was widely considered as one of World War II's greatest disasters. This movie stars Tom Hardy, Fionn Whitehead. It's got Kenneth Branagh. It's got Harry Styles. It's got Mark Rylance in it as well. But the cast doesn't really seem to matter in this film, because it's not so much a film as it is an experience.
Yeah.
It's like a... Do you remember when they first launched IMAX cinemas? You could go for these screenings of, hey, this is what it's like to be in the International Space Station.
Yes, or the shuttle launch.
Oh, the shuttle launch, right?
Yeah.
This is what it's like being at war, I can only imagine.
Or being sellotaped to the back of a Spitfire.
Ooh.
This is a movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's very telling that from the off, there's very little dialogue to start with, and there's a character who goes through the whole story, and you don't even get their name. Their name is never once mentioned. They never explain who they are.
I can't remember anyone's name.
Yes. No, but they never say his
name. Except maybe George, but that's it.
Yeah, but like, they never say his name at all.
Yeah.
It's literally just like, people run into each other, they look at each other, and it's like, well, you're English, you're on a beach, you've obviously been through hell. Same.
Yeah.
Can't talk about the weather because it's awful. And, you know, we want to get out of here.
Yeah.
Like, all that is just unsaid because they just look at each other.
Yeah.
And then get shot at or shelled or Messerschmitt dive them or Stuka dive bombers come in.
And just avoid the hail of bullets coming at you. Yeah. Yeah. There was quite a couple of really interesting bits where people just looked at each other and just, without even nodding, it's not even like a, hey, how you doing kind of thing. No, it's just like they looked at each other and then one of them would just help the other person, or the other person would just sort of knew what they were talking about and grabbed something to go, right?
Or not a single word was exchanged.
Yeah, they can see the shell shock reflected in each other's eyes and they're just like, yeah, we'll help each other out or we won't help each other out, or I've got an idea to get us off this goddamn beach. I mean, we should say as well, it's three stories, because the story of Dunkirk is that the civilian navy, was that what they called it? They called it a certain option, there's a certain title they use at one point of the...
They needed to save their destroyers, because they didn't know where the war was going to take them next. And every time they hit the beach, they would lose boats and lose people. Mm. So they kind of drafted civilians and their boats to cross the channel and
give
save people.
Yeah, it was literally World War II Uber.
Yeah. And you're watching this film. This is a movie that can only be experienced in a massive cinema, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
You need that sound. You need that massive screen. Christopher Nolan has filmed a movie for cinema. I mean, which is more than can be said for a lot of film. It's like it's like Gravity. I remember watching Gravity for the first time, and I was sitting there in a darkened room thinking, I am not going to feel this suffocated if I'm watching this on my TV at home or on an iPad or on my phone. It's just not going to matter. Meanwhile, there are moments where people are trapped underwater, and you know about my freakiness with water. Like, this movie channels all of my greatest nightmares.
Oh, you're just going to be dreaming about ships falling on you and slowly cutting off the atmosphere, the oxygen from you. There's so many scenes of that, of
it's
ships
tremendous.
Just listing and how hard it is to get off a boat sometimes.
Yeah. And they had some really great shots with that. You know, like you
the frame doesn't move.
Great. Yeah.
As the boat is falling. So you don't necessarily see the boat tipping over.
No.
You see people trying to hang on for dear life.
And also trying to find a purchase to jump clear of the boat so they don't get sucked under, or just to get up high enough to get away from the ship falling on them.
But like, just to go back to that shot, it's a fairly mid-tightish shot. So there's no point of reference, there's no skyline, there's no waterline.
Yeah.
So you don't know where it's going, you don't know what's coming towards what. So at one point, it just looks like the water is sort of coming up towards the boats as opposed to the boat sort of tipping into the water.
Or it comes up at angles,
It comes up at an angle, and it's just great. I think some of those shots are amazing.
I think coming back to the sound, it's amazing that, like, this isn't that bloody a film.
No.
Do you notice that?
I don't know what it was, but this is not like... I think I was reminded of Save a Private Ryan in the way that the M1 Garand got that sound from that film that was then used in every Call of Duty game afterwards, which is where the very unique noise of the bullets exiting the chamber and the last pin popping out. Like, that was just overused everywhere.
Yeah.
This is the same for all the machines of war. Like, the bullets sound different, and you can feel, like, you can feel the vibrations going through your body.
Yeah.
The growls of the Spitfires, the screams of the Stukas, like, they're all the noises that you would hear in World War II movies, but they're just so much amped up and unique enough that it feels new again. It's like you've never seen Operation Overlord or the Longest Day in those. It's like it's a fresh genre all of a sudden.
It is a fresh genre because you know Christopher Nolan will never tell a straight story, or at least tell a story in a straight way. And in this movie as well, right from the outset of the film, you can tell that he's playing with our perceptions of time and the way he tells the story. And he uses this really unique method of storytelling where it's focused around, these three main characters, the guy on the beach,
the guy in the boat, and the guy in the plane.
A man who somehow, you know, just for love of country and nation, decides to take his own boat out and not give up.
Yeah, because he's Mark Rylance, the most English man in the world.
He is.
We got to go around there and save those boys.
And Tom Hardy, who is the superhero ace pilot,
The Bane in a plane.
The Bane in a plane. He's got his face covered up with a mask again for the whole movie again.
And he's incredibly tally-ho. It's like, yeah, we've lost leader. Okay, we'll just continue on.
We'll just keep going. Yeah,
I'm running. I've lost my fuel meter. Okay, fine. I'll just keep an eye on it.
Keep going.
As one of the planes is going down, he's just cheerfully cheerio. Kind of like, that's it. Like, it's just like, toodle-pip, let's get on. Meanwhile, on the beach, everyone's miserable and just like, forget it. The stiff upper lip has sailed a long time ago.
Yeah.
It was covered in soldiers trying to get back to England.
Yeah. Christopher Nolan also wrote this film. And I think, can I just say, welcome back, Christopher Nolan. I was not a big fan of your previous two movies. I know Ian disagrees with me about Interstellar, but I absolutely hated The Dark Knight Rises and Interstellar. And I'm liking that you're writing this movie by yourself, because then maybe it shows me that Jonathan Nolan was the weak link.
What's the problem?
Oh, Ian's angry.
David Goyer involved in some of this stuff?
Actually, he was. He was David Goyer. But let me tell you what I loved about the writing. I love the writing in this movie because how do you tell... Well, there's not much of it, but it was phenomenal visual storytelling. Also, you told an amazing, inspirational war movie without a monologue or a grand speech.
Yeah.
That was incredible.
Someone reads the newspaper at the end. That's the closest it comes.
Yeah.
That's it, but nothing else.
Yeah. And I think...
And there were still moments when I choked up.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And it all comes together. Like, there's moments... You think of Mad Max with Bane in the plane, because it is, you know, it's just wide open spaces you're seeing. They're over the English Channel. There's nothing but sea and clouds and these beautiful shots of these Spitfires.
Ugh.
Wouldn't mind seeing a hurricane in there. You know, I get a lot of love for the hurricanes. That kind of like the warriors, the knights of the sky kind of stuff. There's some absolutely amazing shots there. And it's accompanied by this score. Like, don't go into this movie if you're of a nervous disposition. Like, never mind what's going on with the action.
Yeah.
This is like, it just keeps building this score. Yeah. There's a plane crashing and its engine is fine. Or it's not fine, but it's not chuckling out. It's not sputtering out like we're used to in movies. But the score is doing that. The score is giving you the sound of an engine on its last legs or a pilot's hopes falling. And it's like, oh, and then it kind of lays out for a bit and it doesn't come down. It just keeps going up and you get tighter, closer and closer on that knife edge. It just keeps you teetering there the whole way till the very end of the movie, when I did feel something break inside in a good way. Like, by that point, I was like, oh, thank God.
Yeah. No, the script is so sparse that combined with this score, every line that is said is so impactful. There's a great line that's said twice, once by Kenneth Branagh's character, where they're just looking over and they just talk about how they can see home.
Yeah.
Because it's just across the channel. It's just there. And I think that's the overarching pain point of this film. Just because you can see home, it doesn't mean it's easy to get there.
To me, like, the couple of things that really sort of struck home to me was as the movie opens up and you get to the beach, you follow the one of the main characters to the beach, you realize that how everybody's just tired of the war. They're just jaded.
Mm.
They see death. They just get up and they just get on with it. You know, it's that idea that there's... What else is there to say? They've cried. They've shouted. They've screamed. They're just, you know, I just want to go home at this point.
It's a beach made of sand, desperation, and exhaustion.
Yeah, but it's the kind of thing where, like, you know, an explosion happens, you know, 3 feet to your left, and you go like, oh, well, didn't hit me. I'm just going to get up and get back in line. Yeah.
It's not a battle.
It's not. No. Yeah.
Like, the Germans are not pressing. They're not. They're holding them back somewhere else. And as a result, there's just big space. There's nothing is going on.
But the other thing I was going to say was that you never see the actual villains, right? No. You never see the Germans.
Germans never actually physically turn up.
Yeah, and I thought that was great. Like, there's a constant dread. Like, Kenneth Branagh's character says it a couple of times. Like, we're holding them back. They're just over there.
Yeah.
But they never actually physically show up on screen.
Yeah. It never cuts to a pilot.
Yeah.
Saying nine when his
yeah
nine
that
Englisher
would have been
when
really,
you know,
weird.
Yeah, it would have to be that old action comic style.
And all of this with no text. Yeah. It's all visual text. And you're right, Bahe, as soon as the movie starts and you get all of this stuff and there's zero exposition, bar three lines at the beginning of the film telling you about the Battle of Dunkirk, that's it.
Yeah,
just this is what film is. This is what it's supposed to do. And Christopher Nolan's pulled this off just so incredibly well. It's an hour and 47 minutes, which is his shortest film since The Following, which was his first movie, right? And I couldn't bear to watch this movie for any longer. I think an hour and 47 minutes is just about how much I could take before I would become a simpering wreck.
Yeah. I think that point where it just the wave broke, if it was any longer than that, it would have broken. It would have never repaired. It would have just been a quivering mess suffering from shell shock after that.
And I think if any movie deserves the IMAX big screen treatment, is this one.
Yeah.
I mean, he shot it on 65mm film stock. Don't go Transformers in IMAX. Pirates of the Caribbean in IMAX is terrible. This is an IMAX film, right?
And also make sure the sound system is top notch. You want to see this the best. As I said,
you feel it.
Movie. Yeah. In your lungs and in your chest, reverberating
couple of times,
through you.
Yeah, I mean, like at the end of the film, I think Melissa, who was watching it with us, turned to us and go like, did they rejig the chair? Do they have like sound systems under the thing? Is it one of those like effect chairs?
And so James Cameron's working on 3D without glasses. Christopher Nolan has perfected D-Box without D-Box chairs.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Dude, there were a couple moments where you're just like, your pant legs shake.
Yeah,
right?
And it increases that tension because it's only used at those tense moments.
Yeah, it is just the best.
I do have some minor niggles with it though.
Go on.
There's a middle section, I think, where there's an attack going on. So it uses an unusual time structure for a start. And that's quite interesting. But it very clearly signposts that. So when you figure it out, you feel like an idiot. Well, then you see certain characters twice in different situations. Like, oh, okay, that's fine.
I see what you're doing.
But there's one section that's on the beach, which should all be one time section. And it seems like they've gone through all four seasons in one day or one attack. Like, there's like froth up on the coast, which is really, really crappy weather. And then Kenneth Branagh is in sunny southeast somewhere. Like, it's clear blue sky on his side, and it's back to the reverse shot, and it's like raining and kind of gray. Mm. I kind of thought that was weird in a movie that, if there are effects, they're seamless, but there are some effects in there. That has to be. They can't trash that many Spitfires and stuff. The other thing was, this time structure also leads to a weird thing at the end with a certain aircraft that just seems to go on forever. Like, it's like, you know, he crossed it with the ending of Interstellar.
You know, when we think about war movies, we kind of have seen it all, in the sense that the last big war movie we saw was Hacksaw Ridge. If you watch War of the Planet of the Apes, it's essentially a war movie where the act structure is maintained. Despite the various unique characters you saw in Hacksaw Ridge, essentially Act 1, Act 2, Act 3 kind of plays out as any inspirational war movie would play out. This is an incredibly unique take, and I was genuinely surprised by this film, a war movie that surprised me. Even though you know the outcome, you still genuinely feel pleased and content at the end of this film, and also partly because you've been traumatized for an hour and 40 minutes, that those last 7 minutes really count.
Also, Kenneth Branagh looks awesome as an admiral.
He does! was.
It was great.
That coat looks real good.
Looks real good. Yeah. I was thinking to myself, like, man, if I was still in the UK, I'd get myself one of those coats because those coats look good.
Oh, he's got some real stonkers as lines.
Great lines.
They're great. They really just fill you with hope.
Yeah, yeah.
There's the one about what they see coming, which we won't spoil, but there's just that line, you're like, oh yeah. That's like, you just nailed your screenwriting 101 credit there, man.
Yeah.
It's so good.
A great job, Christopher Nolan.
Go check out
Dunkirk and try to watch it in IMAX or a big screen somewhere.
Atmos, whatever the Dolby you can get. Like, what's the THX sound?
THX sound. Yeah. Spend money on this movie. Yeah. It is worth it. It is an experience. It is a roller coaster ride.
I wonder if the moving chair ones do much with the Spitfires.
Oh.
Road trip.
I gotta go check that out now.
We can flag that as research, right?
Yeah. Road trip. Research. Expense it. go watch Dunkirk. When you do, tweet me. I'm on @UmarPagan.
I'm on @McNastyPrime.
I'm @BaheWai.
You've been listening to At The Movies. This is BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Quit eating your burgers off a coffee table. If you want to eat a burger, put it on a bar. Follow your instincts to B-Dubs for the new All-American Cheeseburger. Fresh, juicy beef smashed till it's crispy around the edges, covered in gooey cheese, and stacked to the ceiling with deliciousness. And knock that baby down with a frosted beer at the bar. Just like the sports gods intended. The new All-American Cheeseburger at Buffalo Wild Wings. Roar! Please drink responsibly.